This week, we look ahead to the anniversary of 9/11. It's been 10 years. How has your life changed? And can you show us? Maybe a photo of an unemployment check, maybe the voice of a loved one who's been fighting overseas. Use the Takeaway iPhone app, available on iTunes, or upload what you have by heading to thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. Celeste Headley here. John Hockenberry is out today. Let's take a look at our top stories now at 47 minutes after the hour. The United States Postal Service says it cannot pay a $5.5 billion pension payment that's due this month. The agency may have to shut down completely unless Congress takes urgent action. A Senate committee will meet tomorrow to discuss the crisis. Wildfires in East Texas have turned deadly. A rapidly moving fire tore through homes, killing a woman and her baby daughter before they could escape. Local authorities say winds from Tropical System Lee helped fan those flames. Republican candidate, a presidential candidate, Mitt Romney, spent last night at a Tea Party rally in New Hampshire. Romney told the crowds that career politicians in Washington cannot fix the nation's problems, but he can. The first muscular dystrophy telethon without its founder, Jerry Lewis, raised $61 million. That's $2 million more than last year. And in France, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the former head of the International Monetary Fund, is now home. Strauss-Kahn was cleared of attempted rape charges. We're going to have more on that in a moment. You're listening to The Takeaway. You can follow us on Twitter at The Takeaway. It's Monday morning. I hate to spoil your holiday, but I do want to take a look at some of the work that is ahead for us. And we're joined by Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway, and our current producer, WNYC. Charlie, do you have a word for the week?
Rut. I think we're stuck in a rut.
Oh, that's a good one. Marcus Mabry, editor-at-large of the International Herald Tribune, which is the international edition of our partner, The New York Times. Marcus, you know, since you've moved, your title has gotten way longer.
Do they call it title inflation? I don't know.
I know, but do you have a word for us this week?
My word is consolidation, which may go along with the rut, actually.
Well, if you're in a rut, you might want to be smaller. Anyway, let's start with the economy. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is scheduled to give a speech,
yet another speech,
this Thursday in Minnesota. Charlie, is he going to be different than...
You know, he gave a speech a couple weeks ago in Jackson Hole at this event that they have every year. Again, the outlook has been a little bit gloomy, and he keeps talking about there needs to be something done on the fiscal side of the house, which means basically Congress and the White House.
Instead of a
QE3, a quantitative easing, a Fed stepping in and really being more aggressive and trying to boost the economy. They could do that. But what he's saying and what a lot of commentators and a lot of economists are saying is that this really now is an issue of Congress and the White House. And if they want to jumpstart this economy, they really have to come together and work something out.
Yeah, because Congress is great at coming together and working things out. Let's talk about Dominique Strauss-Kahn. We just mentioned in the headlines he has returned to France over the weekend. So, Marcus, this is the end. Dominique Strauss-Kahn can now just sort of fade into the woodwork of international funds?
Well, you know, he is not the kind to do that. He is no fader into the woodwork kind of guy. He was, of course, before the allegations in New York, he was poised to be the socialist candidate for the presidency of France. And he was actually, polls told us, likely to win. So to go from being, you know, the next president of France to being accused of sexual crimes, as he was, and then for the case to melt away, it was incredible soap opera to watch from France. And now we've seen, as you would expect, the French outrage directed at the American justice system, which, according to many people in France, actually unfairly made him look guilty from the very beginning. That kind of voice has been rekindled here in Europe, and there have been great recriminations against the American justice system. At the same time, and we can expect those to continue this week, at the same time, there's another part of the debate in France, which is that Dominique Strauss-Kahn and the charges against him, which many point out, the case melted away because the prosecutor said they'd have a difficult time making their case and having a credible witness in his accuser, not because he was not guilty.
Right.
And there's a lot of people, particularly women in France, who say that Strauss-Kahn actually represents a kind of cancer of kind of male predatory behavior in France that must change. And that's the fight we're going to see really play out this this week in France, which one of those voices, which group of those voices do we hear more loudly?
All right. Well, Marcus, let me ask you about what we're going to hear most loudly coming out of Libya this week. There's a lot of headlines. A, the search for Gaddafi. B, negotiations between the rebels and then one of the last Gaddafi strongholds had broken down. And then we have this sort of side story that China may have tried to sell weapons to Gaddafi in the weeks before his regime fell. What's going to dominate the headlines of Libya this week?
Well, you know, Celeste, that's a great question. It's going to depend on where you are. If you're here in Britain, in the UK, as I am right now, and I'll be heading off to Paris this evening, but in Britain, the story is about British intelligence actually cooperating with the Gaddafi regime, playing ball with them, and what that says about Britain and its own moral values. But, you know, no one's hands are clean, as we see with the end of the Gaddafi regime. No one's hands are clean. But I think we'll probably make the biggest headlines in the U.S. this week will probably be the fact, we suspect we'll time will tell us, but we suspect probably this week we'll see the fall of Beni Walid, which is one of those last Gaddafi-held holdouts. But we also heard news from the BBC just today, actually, that in fact it was two of Gaddafi's sons who were hindering the surrender of Beni Walid, and the reports are that they've left the city. If that's true, then we expect probably a surrender, or if not, the rebels are telling us a bloody showdown for Beni Walid this week. And we may see the same thing in Sirte in the south.
All right. That's Marcus Mabry, who is the editor-at-large of the International Herald Tribune, the international edition of our partner, the New York Times. Charlie Herman, of course, business and economics editor for The Takeaway and our co-producer, WNYC. I want to end the agenda here, Marcus, by talking about the 10-year anniversary of 9/11. And one of our themes this week, I guess, leading up to it, and for our co-producer, WNYC, is Generation 9/11, which is really kind of trying to take a look at the way our country has changed in the 10 years since. Do you have any idea what way have we changed, maybe irrevocably?
Well, you know, looking at America out here in the world, it is impossible to imagine the America we have today versus the America that existed 10 years ago. Before 9/11, we were a different country. Certainly our role in the world, our posture to the rest of the world was very different. Since that time, kind of the image of America has been convulsed and replaced with a somewhat naive but largely benign force to now a country that's really obsessed and rightly so, given the attack on our homeland, with the fight against terrorism, and how that has changed every aspect of America and its foreign policy, from who we grant visas to the ability of even students from certain countries to arrive in our country, to how we carry ourselves on the global stage.
That's Marcus Mabry, editor-at-large of the International Herald Tribune. Charlie Herman?
You know, just using it as a marker and not necessarily reflecting on the specifics of 9/11 and how we've changed, it's interesting just to look over these last 10 years and sort of think of where the economy has gone. I mean, we had this end of the dot-com boom, and that was a more sort of a regional bust. Then we had this huge explosion in housing. Nothing seemed, the economy just seemed to keep growing. Nothing seemed better. And then we had that collapse. I mean, it's just sort of interesting to kind of look at it. 10 years ago to now, if you looked at it just by the stock market, things don't look that bad. But if you think about the convulsions that we've gone through and what people are sort of dealing with now with this high unemployment and where we're at, again, it doesn't directly tie to 9/11, but it's just interesting to sort of use that 10-year marker period. And that's what I mean in the sense of that we're stuck in a bit of a rut in the sense of how do we go beyond this? How do we find something else? I mean, it's to the point where what the president is expected to propose later this week, even if all of those were his ideas were to be passed by a Congress that doesn't seem to want to cooperate with him, we're kind of stuck in a rut here a bit.
That's Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway and our co-producer WNYC, and Marcus Mabry, editor-at-large of the International Herald Tribune. Thanks to both of you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to put that last question to our other guest who's still with us, Kenneth Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. So, Ken, I mean, you may eventually be writing a book about the 9/11 generation.
Well, I actually have already. the Don't Know Much About History is a new revised edition, and I include the last decade. And I remember when it happened, everybody saying, oh, this will change America forever. And I guess one of the lessons of history is that every generation has had its 9/11 moment. In 1813, it was the Fort Mims massacre, probably something you've never heard of, but it started what was called the Creek War that made Andrew Jackson a military hero in America, shattered America. The Seminole attacks in Florida later on were similar in the 19th century. Of course, Pearl Harbor. So my word for the week, in a sense, would also be resilience, because 10 years later, I walk out of my apartment and I could always look down and see the towers. They were one glance to the left. Now I walk out of my apartment and I remember the depression that settled over the West Village at that time. But yesterday I went up to walk through the High Line and the meat market, where life is as vibrant and full as it's ever been in this part of the neighborhood. And I remember 10 years ago, people really writing and wondering, can this neighborhood survive? And here it is 10 years later, and it's extraordinarily resilient. And that's part of the American spirit, I think.
Americans and human beings perhaps more resilient than we think that we are.
I like to give them credit for that.
Kenneth Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History, the new edition of which includes the 10 years since 9/11. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee. John Hockenberry is out again today. Have a great Labor Day.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.